Well, I was kind of expecting you to talk a little longer. Yeah, I better got the need to go. Well, I've been cleaned until October 12th in 1902 of Fierce. When I was 25, deceased a young pro. I've tried before. I've been lied to God about that since I was 18. God, if you get me through this, I'll never do it again. I promise. I lied. I did it in jail. I did it outside of jail. I prayed to God before I went to court. I did all those kind of things. And came out and I just continued doing what I did. And in the end, when I first started getting high, I was listening to The Stairway to Heaven. It was a brand new album. That's how old I am. It was a brand new thing. I barely was growing my hair long. And I'm an idiot. I was barely growing my hair long by then. And when I ended up here, I was listening to The Highway to Hell. Just about right. And I know we have a theme for our convent, or this service, right? That's what you asked me to talk about. In order to do that correctly for me, I need to talk about some other things too. For example, the pyramid that we have, that we always, when we open Moore's basic text, yeah, I'll just skip the Lior, the pyramid, Debihar, the fear, Rettinger, with self, society, service, and God. Those are the basic cornerstones of the pyramid of freedom that we have at the beginning of our basic text. And so those things taken into context with service, are the basis by which we find personal freedom from active addiction. And it's the one thing that we promise in Narcotics Anonymous. It's the only thing that Narcotics Anonymous promises me is freedom from active addiction. That's it. No other promises. That's it. The rest is up to me and whatever higher power I have. And from your seat, it would be, it's up to you and whatever higher power you have. But the only thing we promise is freedom from active addiction. There are other places that promise other things, but I don't go there. This is the only place I come. I made that commitment a long time ago to come to Narcotics Anonymous. Other addicts were doing the fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous service by, I don't want to use the word confront, by sharing with me the idea that when I put all my energy in one place, I get more out of it. In other words, when I split my energy half here and half anywhere else, I only get half back. And by that, they really showed me that recovery is an all or nothing kind of thing. I either want to make the decision to stay clean and do everything that it takes to do that, or I do it partway. And sometimes I've done it partway. Mostly when I get into trouble, when I'm only doing spiritual principles part-time. And that happens, it can happen any day of the week. But after I got clean that first day, way back when, it became necessary for me to stay clean or die that slow death of continuing to use on a daily basis. And I decided I didn't want to do that anymore. But I really didn't know what it meant to stay clean. I only knew that I needed a place to stay, and the people who were offering me a bed said that if I stay clean, I can stay there. And that was the beginning. That was the beginning of my trips here to Narcotics Anonymous. And I came to NA, and there was other people here before me. Harvors Lazdig, they're the foreganger, right? Foreganger? People that come before you? And so there were many people here before me, and they helped me when I came in the door, They were, in those days where I got clean, there was these long-haired, biker trash, Vietnam vet, drugstore robbing, penitentiary rat guys, man, that's all they were. And they had tattoos all over the place and beards, and they showed up to meetings on motorcycles, and they were actually kind of scary. But they were also something that I needed, and that was to hear a message from somebody that was spiritual enough for me to understand it. That was just simply being honest. These guys were all those things. The most important thing was they were honest. They were honest about the disease of addiction. And that did me a great service by showing me that no matter how you looked or what you did in your life or where you ended up, you could come in here and stay clean no matter what. And that was good enough for me. I didn't like it. I didn't like them. But I stayed clean. Along the way there, one of the guys told me that I needed to, it would help if I did service work. And I really didn't know what that meant, because I was already making coffee, I was already staying. Every month where I lived, we had these spaghetti dinners. And everybody would get together, we'd have a dinner, and then we'd have a dance afterwards. And it was, just whoever was in the fellowship. And other people from other fellowships came too, because it was a lot of fun. And I was already staying late, cleaning up, and I didn't have anything else to do really, except get into trouble. So as long as I was there with other people, I wasn't getting into trouble. And so that was kind of my service. I was just doing it just to stay out of trouble, not to do anything crazy. Because if you leave me alone long enough, I'll start thinking crazy shit. I'll start doing crazy shit if you leave me alone long enough. And it's that inclusive now. If I'm by myself long enough, I start thinking I'm right. I get righter and righter as the days go by, the longer I stay away from, people who are addicts that are clean and living spiritually. And before you know it, I know what everybody needs to do. I'm still waiting for a call from Obama about what to do about the Middle East. I have opinions. I sit at home, I yell at the TV. Yeah, King of Dance can do Heller and stay back and yell on the TV, right? And and after a while, everybody's full of shit. Just leave me alone long enough, and that's just how it gets, And I think I'm Mr. Clean. When I come in, it's no longer Narcotics Anonymous, it's Maynard Anonymous. And I have an opinion on how everyone should act. But in the end, what I really need to do is just simply hear the message of recovery that, I'm powerless over my addiction, my life has become unmanageable, and that doesn't matter if I'm using drugs or not. That's just how I can be on a day-to-day basis. In fact, after that first couple of weeks that I got clean, the whining and sniveling, everything hurts, you guys know how it is, everybody knows how that goes. It's using is not that, there's no mystery. We're a room full of addicts. You know how it is to get clean. And it's the same here. People ask me, when I've been home in the U.S., it's the same over there. People ask me, why are the addicts any different? No. Everybody, comes in. The heroin addicts are all, whoa, it hurts so bad, no one understands me. I want my mom, if not methadone. And, the coconuts and the speed freaks, they're all the same. Did you hear that? Somebody give me a cigarette. And the alcohol addicts, they're all going, I hate this shit. I don't even know what the fuck. I don't know why I come here. Who does he think he's talking to? And everybody's looking at each other. And look what he's wearing. And look what she's wearing. Who she thinks she is. And all the dope smokers are going, what? Is he talking about me? Did he talk about me? The meeting's over, right? Was he talking about me? Who the fuck's that Indian think he is anyway? So here I came to NA, and people were doing a service by just simply being around me, because I didn't like anybody. And the list goes on and on. It didn't matter who it was. I didn't like white people. I didn't like Mexicans. I didn't like black people. essentially, it got to the point where I didn't like any other Indians either, right? You know, and they didn't like me. And it suddenly occurred to me that, you know, maybe it's not, just like this one adage used to say, you know, maybe it's not everyone else. You know, it might be you. And that used to piss me off, because this was my sponsor, right? And I'd call him up, and he would tell me shit like this, and I'd just hang up. And why did I call him anyway? And then I'd sit there, and most of it was that he would say this, you're getting angry because I'm right. Man, I hate this guy. But I kept going back, you know, because he was right. He was right. He was one of the few guys that wouldn't listen to, you know, my denial. He was one of the few guys that wouldn't listen to my bullshit. And he's also the first guy to have me do service. He sent me to H&I meetings at a local small little juvenile penitentiary. You know, the training ground. In the USA, we send folks to the juvenile detention centers in training for jail and training for the penitentiary later. So I started going to H&I meetings there. And I was, three or four months anyway. I've been clean maybe about 3 months. And my sponsor said, you know, it's time for you to do something for someone besides yourself for once. Man, you know, you expect me to listen to you, you know, when you say shit like this to me. He says, yeah, I do. I mean it. And so I went, and I went for months, and it was there that I heard another addict say, he does service to help him stay clean. Not to save anybody else or help anyone else, he does it to help himself stay clean. And I got that idea that one of the basic ones really was, you know, again, if I'm doing this, then I'm not out getting into trouble. You know, and I did have to learn how to behave in certain ways and certain rules that I didn't really like, but I could do it, which was, you know, like showing up on time, right? You know, you guys thought I was going to be late. Everybody was panicking and freaking out. Where's Maynard? Where's Maynard? You know, I started getting calls about 10 minutes before I got here on the phone, you know, one after another. It wasn't Pierre, it was Lars. They were calling me back. Hey, where are you? Where are you? Well, you know, I learned how to be on time by going to H&I meetings, because in jails, they open the door, they close the door. If you ain't there, that's it. You know, and if we're going to do service work, we had to be there. You know, otherwise, addicts did not get the message of recovery. They did not get what I got for free because I didn't show up on time. And I did not want that to happen. So I started learning how to behave myself. And when I say behave myself, simply showing up on time, that was something that was important. The same with coming to meetings. You know, people started without me. I thought this was kind of weird. You know, people started meetings without me. Man, you know, they're not waiting for me. No, the world goes on without me. I'm not the center of the universe, and that's the basic part of my disease, you know, is that I'm self-centered. So learning to do service and work with other addicts was a new thing for me. I had to practice social skills that I thought I had, but I really didn't, because my disease had progressed to a point where I was afraid of honesty, I was afraid of openness, I was afraid of willingness, I was afraid of sitting down in a room with people. I wasn't afraid of things I should have been afraid of, like police beatings or, you know, high-speed car chases or guns or shootouts. I've been shot at, all this kind of thing. That didn't scare me that much. But sitting down with a group of addicts and opening up to my heart, that scared the shit out of me. My life was completely reversed. I was unable to be a human being as I now understand the word. And I did not know the words, the two words, human being. I did not know that. I really did not know that that was how I had progressed. Coming here started to reverse that process. I started being human again. I started listening. I started opening up. It wasn't easy. I didn't like it. But that was my self. I was starting to give up a little bit of myself. And I'm still selfish. No, don't get me wrong. I'm still self-centered. And then I started into the idea of God. And that was a little different for me. I'm, as most of you know, for those of you who don't, I'm American Indian, Native American, Anishinaabe. Musqueam, Sagi, Ganegan, Dojiba, Anishinaabe, Anishinaabe. That means that I'm a Red Lake Chippewa. I come from Red Lake Indian Reservation. And we have our own ideas about the spiritual nature of the universe and those kind of things, but when I got here, I wasn't paying attention to any of that. No, and I come from the Midwest. I grew up in the Midwest, where it's now, you know, Trumpistan and all that other, you know. But you could go to a Midwestern town and there'd be a church on every corner. So I can tell you that Christianity had a big influence in how I grew up and the things that I listened to. And so when I came to NA, I was presented with the idea of having to clarify what I thought of as what my higher power was. And I was able to do that with some difficulty, sorting through different ideas and throwing some away that didn't work for me and grabbing on to other things that did. And in the end, you know, I gladly identify myself as a native spiritualist person. I'm not Christian, I'm not any of the desert religions, I know most of the world is, but that I'm not. And so my idea of God is maybe a little different than yours, and it may be the same. Probably is, in the end. But rather than even talk about any of that, my idea of God needed to change, and it needed to grow. And it did over time, and still does. And the more it grows, the more I realize that I need to learn. Because there's more that I understand about God than I used to. And my idea of service has changed. You know, eventually it wasn't just cleaning up and doing those things. I started becoming a meeting leader. I started doing things for other people because it was important. Because people started to trust me, because I was untrustworthy as a person when I came to Narcotics Anonymous. You couldn't trust me. You know, I would go through the window, I would go and carry a TV, I would take your radio, I would steal your car. I know how to steal cars. I stole all kinds of weird stuff and tried to sell them. I stole bicycles twice, right? When I came to Denmark, look at all these bikes, man. I don't know if I'd have got clean by the time I was 25 or not. Look at these bikes, look at them, they're just sitting there, right? Wow, and I've been clean 18 years by that time. When I came to Denmark in 2001, I've been clean 18 years, and the first thing that struck me was, oh man, look at all these bikes. You know, look how simple it is, right? It, just that drug addict crap jumps into my mind sometimes. So we have God, we have service, we have self, and society. And society, we talk about being a productive member of society. You know, it took me a while to start wanting to become a productive member of society. I didn't really want to. And for one thing, I had to deal with cultural stuff where I come from a group of people that Alto Harvard would set from Store Sampa. And we stayed in that gap. In order to be a productive member, I needed to be doing something like work, school, or something like that. And I didn't want to do either one. My sponsor was after me about, man, you gotta do something. You gotta do something. You can't just not do anything. And so I went back to school, mostly because I didn't want a job. Right? I didn't want to work. The only work I knew how to do was unload railroad cars and stir big vats of lead. You know, stuff that poor people do. You know, working in the fields, just with the other migrant workers in the United States. Those were the only jobs that I could ever get. So I went back to school, and the first thing that I saw was there was these courses about alcohol and drug abuse, and I thought, shit, I know something about that. You know, that'd be easy for me to take alcohol and drug abuse courses. So I became a counselor after a couple of years. We worked through this real fast, and then I continued to go to school because it was easy, and I did social work, and then after 3 years, I had 2 degrees in 3 years. I was working school. I became obsessive. I started doing all this different stuff. So my participation in society became larger and larger. I started getting jobs and job offers and stuff, and I really still didn't want to work, but it was like this, they were giving me money to do stuff that it was easy for me, right? You know, and one time I went home and talked to my grandmother, and I said, Grandma, I'm tired. I'm going to work. I'm worried. You know, I talk to people. They're giving me money, and blah, 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 blah. But I'm tired and I don't want to do it anymore. She said, you know, are you good at what you do? And I said, yeah. She said, do you like what you do? I said, yeah. She said, do they give you money for doing what you do? I said, yeah. She said, you should do that. You know? The old lady was right, you know, but what else can you say? And so I went back and finished the school, continued to work, and my participation in society got bigger and bigger. And so in my service to the fellowship, I became a treasurer, I became a secretary, and eventually a GSR. I became a GSR. First it was an alternate GSR, and then a GSR, all in those first 4 years. And eventually I became, here we call it OSCO, but there it's ASR, Service Representative for the area. And I was doing that in the region that I lived in. And I was all the time involved in hospitals and institutions, where I had started going to penitentiaries, the prisons, and I did that for 2.5 years, every Thursday for 2.5 years. Even when it landed on Christmas or Thanksgiving, I went anyway. And I enjoyed this, mostly because I could leave. You know, when I left the penitentiary, you know, I could leave and people had to stay, right? You know, I felt grateful every time. Now, I didn't always want to go. There were many, many times when I thought, oh, man, I need someone else to do this. I'm tired. I don't want to do it. But I did it anyway. You know, and I was learning that sometimes there's rewards for doing it even when I don't want to. You know, and doing it for reasons that I don't want to. And so I was learning the value of service. Now, one of the things that we have to deal with here, one of the things I had to deal with was all the different issues when it comes to service. Like getting along with people and having differences of opinion and becoming, having qualities about my character, like integrity, trust, all these kind of things were all developing for me because I really didn't know how to be those things or practice them with other addicts or with other people for that matter. But I was having to do that. I was having to learn how to cooperate, negotiate, compromise. Those are all high-level skills that I just didn't have. I was more interested if someone yelled louder, then that was how we did things, you know, and that wasn't what we were doing in service. And it was difficult because there wasn't that many guidelines. Now we have many guidelines that help us, and we have a lot of experience from other people to help us. But in those days, we didn't. And so it was difficult. I was involved in arguments, public arguments, and discussions about many things. You know, there was things that we had to deal that were very sensitive. In the H&I committee, there was a guy who was going to the penitentiary. He was taking some of the guys home with him when they got out of the penitentiary. And he was doing stuff with them, or he was having sex with them. And the penitentiary found out, and they were starting to look at NA as a whole as something that was dangerous for their people. And we had to divorce ourselves from this one addict's behavior. And it was difficult because none of us knew how to do this in a reasonable and positive way. And so it was a lot of finger pointing and yelling and not knowing what to do next. And it was struggling. We were growing up. We were growing up in public. Now this was at a time when Narcotics Anonymous was still growing up too. We weren't very big, we weren't very large, and there was a lot of trouble, and we were still involved with other fellowships, and that was a big influence on a lot of things that we did. We weren't finding our own way. We still had plenty of people that were, like I said at the beginning, still going to other places for recovery, and so we were only getting half of their energy, and we were only giving, you know, getting half back. When you give your full, you get everything back. When I give half, I only get half back. And so it was a difficult time, and it wasn't that easy. And later on, when I moved out to California, I found it a little more settling to be involved in service because there were so many more people interested in Narcotics Anonymous and service work. And by that time, it was like 1990 or so. And so the service there was starting to become, at the fellowship, I should say, our fellowship was starting to become more mature and come up with guidelines and talk about the spiritual principles behind our traditions and started talking about the newer things, or they're not so new now, but the principles and the ideas that we needed to expand. And it was an exciting time, but it was also difficult. Later on when I moved to Texas, now I moved to Texas and I gotta tell you that I lost 30 IQ points just crossing the state border. And I lived down there for like, oh, I don't know, about 5-6 years, 2 years too long. But I have to tell you that I ran into a group of people in San Antonio that there was almost 25 to 30 NA groups, actual groups, not just meetings, groups. When I say NA groups, I mean people that are trying to follow the traditions as best they can, having business meetings every month, and people coming to those meetings. And those people that came to the groups were committed to that particular group. They attended other meetings or other groups, but there was a home group, the idea of a home group. And these were, there's 25 or 30 of them. Now, we have a difference between NA meetings and NA groups. In NA group, you follow the traditions. In NA meeting, you don't necessarily do that. You still get a message of recovery. There are plenty of people that show up. It's just that the NA meeting doesn't follow the traditions. They follow some of them. However, most likely what happens is they start to fall away from the service structure. And remember the service structure, and we read it. Just a little bit, before we started, it says that when we follow our group conscience, there's an ultimate authority that loving God speaks to us. And that is in the service structure. That is in our traditions. And when we do not involve ourselves in the service structure, we remove ourselves from that voice of God. And so when I found this group of 25 or 30 groups doing this stuff, it was very interesting. And it was very exciting. And so we found this, up to that point I've been used to doing service in the area where everyone talked. Some people talked two or three times at the same time. And some people had arguments, and some people would agree with each other, and they would still talk as if they were arguing. And so our meetings were going on for 3 or 4 hours, and there was, time, long time, and it was boring, it was running people off. Well, down there, they were having the different groups, all 25 of them, because we had 25 of them, and mostly about 20 of them showed up on average every month for the 3 or 4 years that I was involved at the area level there. 5 minutes was the max they could talk. And if we had no issues that were emergency, nothing that needed to be voted on without, at least 30 days ahead of time advance. If there was some kind of emergency that needed everyone to vote and be all excited and freaking out at one time, it meant we planned poorly. It meant that we were the ones that were making mistakes in our planning, so that we were being a disservice to the fellowship, to the Advent who still suffers, because we didn't have our shit together. So eventually we were able to work these things out, and even though it was 25 or 30 NA groups, our meetings were only an hour and a half to 2 hours long, our service meetings, and we got a lot more done. We had public information committee, we had H&I committees, we had welcoming committees, we had home group support committees, we had all kinds of stuff going on. Now, this was in a city of, I guess it must be 2 million people there, so it was a fair-sized city and there was a lot of people. But it was the most functional service structure I've ever seen. It still is, for that matter, the most functional service that I've ever seen happen. Now, as I did more service, as my participation in society grew, as my understanding of God grew, as my understanding of myself grew, my point of freedom continued to grow. I'd been clean 8 or 9 years by this time, 10, 11, 12, 13 years by the time I was that. And by the time I had 15 years clean, I was back in California again and was getting ready for this world convention in San Jose, California. And I went. And there was this new thing, or at least it was new to me, it was called the World Board. Now we have a World Board, right? There's a World Board, I guess. I've been out of touch, but it was a new thing then. And there was all these people sitting in this panel up in this room, and they had an open mic. And I thought, an open mic? I can't let that be. I got to say something. So I went over to the open mic, and they were talking about making sure that in order for someone to be on the World Board, you had to have 15 years clean. And I just thought that was a mistake. I thought that was a big mistake, actually. Mostly because at that time in 1998, Africa had still developing, South America was still coming out of being what they call Toxicology Anonymous. At any rate, they were switching from something called TA to NA. Asia still still long behind in contacting the fellowship, you know, and China, they were still shooting addicts in the head and charging the family members with the bullets. And, you know, it was just a weird time for addicts anywhere except in the U.S. And here was this whole panel of people, mostly English speakers, saying that you couldn't be a member of the World Board unless you had 15 years clean. And that meant that a whole bunch of addicts on the rest of the world could not be part of the World Board for another 10, 12, 15 years. I didn't like that. I don't like that idea at all. And I said so. And I said that that was, you know, you're making this an exclusive gig, and that's not how spirituality works. And I thought that we should, by this time I was talking about zones and different things, we should represent the fellowship as a whole by equal representation from different parts of the world, no matter how long you've been clean. And that this was something that I thought was important. And that was it. You know, I left it at that. I left and I went out the door, and a whole group of people chased me out there and started saying that I was being racist because I was expecting quotas from other parts of the world that weren't, you know. And no. And they were talking at that time about how difficult it was to come up with translations for the basic text, and it was just a bunch of stuff, and it just got real ugly out in the hall with all these guys who had just been elected to represent our fellowship, and I wasn't quite expecting this, right? So I was doing my best, and they were surrounding me. They surrounded me in a corner, and they were all on my shit, right? You know, getting on me about da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And there was two black guys, and I said, well, you know what? You know, the rest of the world isn't necessarily all white. I said, you black guys should know this. Don't give me shit about this race stuff, man. You know, that's not what I mean. What I mean is the rest of the world is not English-speaking American white people. You know, we have to be inclusive of everybody if we're going to call ourselves a spiritual fellowship. That's all I'm saying. You know, and at any rate, it all boiled down to, you know, another idea that we need to come through with when it comes to service. Now, the local issue that we had here, when was it, 10 years ago, with the translation. You know, does anybody remember that? Some of you guys around here, who remembers that translation thing? Man, was that got ugly, didn't it, right? That was some ugly shit in some places. The fellowship up in Helsingør, the service structure's never recovered from that. You know, there's not a functioning service structure in the same way there was before that came up. And it's still not done, right? You know, and we did that thing that the World Service does too. When they don't want to make a decision, they say, okay, we're going to decide that it's going to be this way, and then we're not going to talk about it for another 5 years. As if that's going to solve anything. All it does is put something off to later. And if you're a drug addict, you know how that works, right? You know, oh, well, I'll get to it later. You know, by that time, everybody forgets about shit, hopefully. So we all have these different issues, and here in Denmark and in Europe, we're going to have a war will come up, and you know we have a bunch of other stuff that's happening sometimes in service, it isn't who's sitting here, it's who isn't here. You know, where do we need to carry the message? You know, who needs to have the message carried to them? And for those of us who have already had the message, how do we do that? And what's the best way of doing it? Now, service has been described in a lot of different ways as, you know, the reason why some of us stay clean. Some of my heroes have been clean the longest they've done service. Other people get away without having to do so much service. Well, I wasn't one of them. I had to do a lot of it. Now, I got to tell you that the only time I ever turned down any kind of service post was here in Denmark. I thought I was going to move. I was trying to move, and I didn't. And, you know, I would do that over again if I could, but I can't, so I won't. But I wanted to move, and so I decided that people were asking me to do service, and I said no. And That's the only time I've ever said no to any service. Sometimes when people call me to come speak, sometimes I got something going on with family or something, and I'll say, no, I'm busy. Mostly I do whatever I can to give back as good as I can. Some years ago, people asked me to come speak at the men's meeting here. There was a men's meeting. I don't know if they still have men's and women's meeting. I didn't look at the schedule. Yeah, is there men's and women's? You know, I came to speak at the men's meeting here 10 years ago or something. In fact, you were there. He came in and said, wow, Maynard, you know, last time I heard you talk, you were wearing your wife's underwear. What? Don't say that in front of all these men. Come on, man. And I forgot. That was a joke I used to use, right? I'd forgotten I didn't even say that shit, right? Now what am I going to talk about in a men's meeting when everybody's sitting there thinking I'm wearing my wife's underwear? So I had to be honest, right? And I have to talk about stuff, right? So, what else? As we expand in society, there are other things that we do. I was out doing stand-up, and he was there. He went before me. He was funnier than I was. Other things. Sometimes, as a recovering addict, I do not know when I need help. There are many things that I'm good at, but one of them is not knowing when I'm slowly sinking into that thing of depression. And what has helped me most is when other addicts have come forward and talked to me about something that I'm doing or that I'm not doing. And that's been very helpful to me over time. There was a guy that came up to me, I guess I'd been clean about a year and a half, and he came up to my house, and I'd been going, working school, and I quit going to meetings. And he came up and knocked on the door and said, hey, come on, let's go have some coffee, let's go do something. And I said, no, I gotta stay here, I gotta study, all this other stuff. And one of the things that he said to me was, well, stay here and isolate your junkie ass. And then he just left. And it pissed me off, no end. And I ran out there and I got down there by his car, and he said, I knew you'd come. So service doesn't just mean, in an organized fashion that we have, it also means to each other in a loving, caring way, carrying the message. He was able to help me. He was able to help me in ways that I couldn't help myself. And other people helped me in different ways, and I learned from that. I learned to be able to accept their help. I learned to be able to accept cooperation with people. And I'm not real good at that, or I haven't been in the past. I'm better at it now. I'm better at a lot of things now than I was before I came in here. I learned commitment by coming to Narcotics Anonymous. I learned the idea about that. I'm still not 100% good at it, but I learned about it here. I learned by showing up regularly. I learned by doing the things for a year, taking these commitments on for a year, even though it kind of hurt to do it. I did it anyway and was able to finish most of the jobs that were given to me. How do you argue with it? I've been clean for 34 years and some odd months, you can't argue with clean time, I guess. You can always argue with me about all different kinds of stuff because I have plenty of opinions and I'm not always right. But there are some things that I'm pretty dead on. I've been around long enough to know some things. I got here because there were people willing to do this stuff before me. And they continued to do it even though I wasn't very cooperative. And some of them guys are dead. And I'm grateful to them for having carried the message to me. And I'm grateful for the time that I've taken to give back. Now, one of the things that one of the guys used to say to me was, the only way you can show your gratitude in Narcotics Anonymous is to carry the message. And that's certainly been true over the years. Now, in my personal life, in all of these different areas, my pyramid of recovery, my pyramid of freedom, I've been able to do a lot of different things along with the God that I understand and other addicts helping me, but also other non-addicts. I've been able to get, the bigger the base, the higher the point of freedom. I went to the University of California, Berkeley. That's not that big of a name here, but it is in the United States. It's one of the premier universities in the Western world. And that's a big thing from a lowly bottom of the barrel kind of guy like me, where I used to, when I showed up in here, I was selling my blood on the street, you know. Then they stopped taking me. You know, I've done a lot of different things with a lot of different help. I've moved to Denmark. If you'd asked me 34 years ago if I'd end, you know, oh, one of these days you're going to end up in Denmark. I'd have said, shit. Well, what am I going to do in Europe? You know, we got enough white people right here in the United States, right? Why am I going to go to Europe? Well, you know, here I am. And once again, I have no idea, right? Never say never. I've done all the things I said I was never going to do. You know, I said I'm never going to stop using. I'm never going to quit smoking dope. I'm never going to get married. I'm never going to get divorced. I'm never going to be a dad. I did all those things. I said, I'm never going to get married again. I did again, right? You know, I said, I'm never going to date somebody in my home group. I did that. I'm never going to date somebody in my area. Then it got, not even in my region, am I ever going to date anybody again? And I did, I'm never going to marry an addict. I did that too. Just John up to God. I did that too, right? You know, I didn't say anything about Vikings though, right? I never said I was going to marry a Viking, but I did that too. You know, so here I am, having said all these things that I was never going to do and done them, and it's all right. You know, it's never alone, never again, never alone. Da 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 da. One last thing I want to say before I give it back to old Lars here. You know, so many people have helped me. So many people have taken the time, like Kenneth. Where's he at? He's back there. Yeah. They can't hardly catch that guy. You got to look at him. See, right there with his hand sticking up. Because if you don't look at him right now, he's going to run by. He's going to be going by on his bike or some shit. Because I can't ever catch his ass. Last year when he gave me a ride here, he brought me in a Porsche, right? A Porsche. He brought me up here in a Porsche. He did a little service work, brought me in a Porsche. It was really cool too, man. I just liked the way it sounded. Just sitting in this car, and all these dudes started going like this, right? You know, I could tell they were all turned on, right? Now I know what this means, right? You know, I'm turned on. And the women all started going like this, right? They just heard the car, right? These women all started posing and shit. I said, wow! And then they looked over and looked in the car and seen me. The hell with God. That's all right, I know him, right? I know the owner of this car, right? All different kinds of people do service to help me, you know? When I was going to school and struggling so much at Baron Enningsburg, you know, yeah, I come in long by USA, even to dance it, and through the I hear, I tell you, it's my dance, and you come to school, and so clear you had Enningsburg. You have a stone and spin a pro. I'll do a little spin, and you have a stone spin program, right? You know, but so now I'm an analytics partner. So many people have helped me through all those issues because yeah, coming to Moulin, it's Claire or school. But you know, people helped me and supported me. The fellowship here, even when I couldn't speak or understand a word of Danish, new you have got star this out folks here. And the bar gong, you're sitting in Moulin, trial of a day. Kenneth would leave home and say, 30 days. Tres day. 60 days. How Femme stay? Yeah. 90 days. Fuck, man, I sound like a ghost or some shit, right? 6 months. I said, man, get a woman in here. You're starting to turn me on. Come on. Whispering in my ear and shit, man. Let a woman do it. Everybody help me here. Everybody. You know, even the lady up in Helsinger when I had 19 years, I got here, knit nor clean. She stood up and said, Maynard, you got clean when I was 5. I got 5 gray hair, leave me the sob right then, man. I had no gray hair when I got here to Denmark, right? That's where it started, it was her. I always used to say it was Helle. Everybody knows Helle, Chef, and my wife. I used to say it was her, but it wasn't her. It was that lady up in Helsinger that got my gray hair. Had nothing to do with her. Hella's her only bit of help. She taught me how to shave. You know, I don't know how to shave. I've never shaved until last August, right? Almost a year, you know? You used to have hair back then, but I was shaving and I I shaved, and after I was done, I said, Helen, did you use this to shave your legs? She goes, no. I said, a little higher. Nice. I kind of got turned on, right? You know, and she goes, I said, did it a little higher? She said, no. I said, well, what do you use this for? She goes, it's all. Did you not tell me that? She goes, oh, there's all kinds of dopants right over there, right? I said, well, why didn't you say something, right? But she's also the one that, when she get ready for stand-up, she said, you know, I went in, I started, hey, you gotta tell her to dance, right? You know, you tell the Ekman's dance. You have Vaska, Vaska being Vipan, you have Vaska being Bupnaga, and the Haley with Fayol, and Nari Preferity, who kick up a mind, say, you are Lee Brookman Numsaclul. See, and none of you guys told me about Numsaclul, right? You know, don't tell the Indian. Yeah, let him figure it out himself, right? Now, if you're a guy sitting there and you don't know about Numsaclul, you got to think about it now, right? Start thinking right now. Yeah. This must be an American. He's got somebody that's oversettled for him. Oh, God, welcome. Yeah. Are you in for a ride? Holy shit. I have to thank the fellowship here in Denmark. I have to thank the fellowship in Oakland. In Kansas, Texas too. Those are the four places that I really needed help, and I got it when my life was in danger. I don't say that my life was in danger when I got here, but my life had changed so much that I was so far out of anything I'd ever been before, and you guys saved me. You know, you guys saved me by doing your service, by just showing up at the meetings. You know, and if you don't do any service, that's all right. Just keep coming back, you know? And if you do service, you know, I was just at a meeting in the U.S. where there was this many people. They started the meeting, and by the time it was over, there was only eight of us left. And one of the guys had said, will somebody help me clean up? And people went, zoop, 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 zoop. Man, they were gone, right? And I thought, wow, you know. And eventually, the only people left at the end of the meeting were the ones that helped him clean up. And I got to tell you that I was hoping for some kind of cosmic lesson there that I could bring back here and share with you about that to motivate folk. But you know what? I don't have anything other than, you know, reach over and grab somebody that you know and say, can you help me tonight? I need to do this. You know, and sometimes that's the most powerful way to get people to get involved. You know, is reach over. Because guilt don't work. Have you ever tried to guilt somebody to do service? Oh, you should do this, right? I've heard that shit since I was five. Oh, you should do this, or you should do that. And you know what? Shoot on someone else, right? You know, guilt don't work, shame don't work. Oh, you know what? You know, you used to do worse when you were using. Well, so what, man? That's then, this is now, you know? It's a whole different ballgame today, you know? And getting me to feel ashamed don't work either. You know, I'm done feeling ashamed. You know, I got new mistakes to make that I want to feel ashamed about. I ain't gonna listen to what mistakes you try to make up for me. Just grab somebody, have them help you. You know, if you got sponsees, as my sponsor tells me, since when do sponsees ever do what you tell them? Yeah, right? That's what he said to me. I said, well, you know, he said, yeah. He wasn't impressed. Right? You know, by the way, my sponsor's been cleaning longer than I have. That was something I needed to have. It's not necessary now, but it was at the time I got that sponsor. Well, are we about done? No? Yeah. Let me. I already said I was going to wrap up and turn it over to you. I've been working all day today. Tired. I'm still kind of jet lagged. Got home from here to Denmark. From the United States, from seeing my mom. Went to meetings over there, come home, start working again, and every now and then I just feel like I'm ready to fall asleep immediately. And when I lay down, then I'm awake 15 minutes later going, all right, let's go. So I'm still doing that. It's been a week and a half now, and I'm still kind of in and out, jet lagging. But I'm glad to be back. 59, almost 60. Don't know how that happened, but you know, the alternative is worse, so I'll just keep going. Been struggling with my health, have had multiple things wrong with me, but I'm still here. Be careful with it. So, if you're having a good day, enjoy it. You know, if you're having a bad day, it gets better. Take hold. You know, and we'll all just keep coming back. Talk to you.
Modet til at ændre de ting, vi kan, og visdom til at se forskel.